ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corb Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Friday. Oh, it's been a busy week. Three games each day for the first 13 days of the T20 World Cup. So we've got a lot to chop up on that front. Plus, domestic cricket, the Australian women's national team start life under Sophie Molyneux coming up in their series. So, oh, we got a bit to pick apart today on this Friday. How are you, Teddy?
Corb, I'm well. I see you're not in the studio today. You always give me grief for travelling around. Yeah.
I'll never give you grief again for any technical problems when you're on the road either, as I've experienced today. So apologies for keeping everybody waiting. But
having said that, you're in better form than the last time you recorded a podcast from Perth, where you were nowhere. I had to hold the ship up. For those lucky listeners that remember, that was after the Adelaide Test match, when you just thought it was your job to celebrate retaining the Ashes. And so, I don't know, on 2 hours sleep, you fluffed your way through trying to talk about a test match. Yeah.
Couldn't get my microphone to work, which made the whole thing sound worse. It's sort of scratchy on bad quality. But, hey, microphone's firing. I'm feeling good, feeling fresh. So made the trip over yesterday, just like a little office in the sky, Teddy, with the Wi-Fi nowadays. So I was able to get some work done, which was good. So head back in footy mode. So we've got a reason for that is a State of Origin game tomorrow. So
nothing like a little bit of made-up rivalry to get a football season started. Well done to our friend from the AFL. It'll be amazing. Yeah. It's the 13th of February, folks. No one cares.
The good thing is, though, Teddy, is it means earliest start for all the World Cup games. So how's that? I can fire up the subscription.
It's been a busy week. Just while we're talking some smack, star-spotted Annabelle Sutherland today in Double B. Hey. We've got a beautiful bakery below our office. She was tucking into a coffee and croissant.
How good? Did you say hello or you just kept walking?
She was busy. I waved. I did wave.
Nice. It is an ideal timing for us recording this pod due to the fact that almost the minute we're going to finish recording, Australia will start their game against Zimbabwe. So we know that for many of you, once you tune into this podcast, you're not going to get the full wash-up. Maybe we can set ourselves up for failure here, Teddy, and do some predictions. There used to be a show over here called The Western Front, which Tim Gossage and Lockie Reed hosted, and they used to record it during the week. It was a footy show. And it would air on the weekend, and often the Eagles or Dockers would play before then. And they would have this great knack of saying, you know, one of them would say, oh, the result went as predicted for the Dockers. And the other one would say, oh, I don't know about that, Goss or Lockie. You know, I tipped the other way and have a bit of fun with it. So I feel like we're going to do our best impression on that here, where unfortunately for a lot of you, when you listen to it, you will know the result and we won't.
I was hoping we could maybe drag it out and live call the first, five overs. And people could, get their fix that way.
So Zimbabwe, they're the African qualifiers. They won't have Brendan Taylor, I wouldn't have thought. He's a 40-year-old who had to retire the other night with a hamstring injury, so he's in significant doubt. And the Australian team, well, really, Teddy, this has been the story of the week. Things have been turned on its head, really, not just for the injury front surrounding the bowlers. There's no Cummins, there's no Hazelwood. Stark's retired, we know that. And now Mitchell Marsh, so that the captain of the team, due to some internal bleeding, was a shock withdrawal, obviously, from Australia's first up game up against Ireland. The thing I think, which a lot of people may have missed, and I think I was one of them in an earlier podcast, Sean Abbott is there as the travelling reserve. He's yet to be added into the official 15-man squad. Mm. So Australia are actually rolling with 14 at the moment. Now, under World Cup rules, for newer cricket fans that aren't familiar, basically, if you're not in the 15, you're not eligible to play. And once you take someone out, you can't put them back in. So that's actually really shrewd management. It means that they've got a spot available. So if Marsh is still out and Smith arrives, you think that this game might be a tight turnaround for him. But certainly for the next couple of games, there's a chance that they could add essentially Steve Smith in for the place of the injured Josh Hazelwood and go with a little bit more batting depth, Teddy, and he can play alongside Marsh.
Yeah, and you get a look at conditions. There was a nice little breakdown for those listening. So Steve Smith has flown over to India. There's still a spot now in the squad. And as you've just alluded, if Marsh recovers, you can create a little bit of flexibility. I do like how you said internal bleeding. It's also known as a little kick in the... It was pretty grim watching to see someone keel over like that.
How, like, surely in your career, Teddy, you've come across things like this, like someone getting hit in the nets or whatever it turns out to be. I mean, like,
I've seen some pretty, I don't know if this podcast is the place for it, maybe a pub during a live show, but I saw some pretty grim things happen, people being hit in boxes that then snapped and snapped back, and so not nice at all. Yeah.
So let's assume Smith's not there. Let's assume Marsh isn't playing. Basically, you're going to look at a lineup that's got Inglis now up the top, Green, Renshaw at four, Stoinis, Maxwell, Conley, Zampa and Kuhneman, and they played Bartlett alongside Ellis the other night. Bartlett only bowled the two overs, which means we're looking at the guys that are part of the squad but not playing. Marsh is obviously one injured, and the only other two guys are Tim David, who's coming back from injury, and Ben Dorsius. So at the moment, it feels a little bit like all hands on deck, that the guys that are available and playing are. That's pretty much the shorthand of it all, and they just got to try and get through these games, Teddy, and hope that they get some players back.
It feels Australia light, doesn't it? It's not... It's not how you'd want to be shaping up for a World Cup, but they'll do their best, and you know they'll more than likely move through the round and keep their seeding of number one, and we'll see them in the later stages. And then you only really need to play three good games of cricket. So hopefully by that stage they've worked through that, and you never know in T20 cricket. But if you were on the road to prediction, you wouldn't say that the Aussies are the favourites to play India in the final, which... You know, only two or three short months ago, you definitely were.
And I know lots of the commentary has been, oh, you know, finally Steve Smith's going over. I must admit, I'm not in that camp. I don't think you are either. I think we sort of pulled this apart at the time that if he is to play, this is the kind of scenario he would play in, where there's a spot that opens up in the top order and eventually he comes in and gets to face the new ball up front. So he's going there essentially as the like-for-like swap, isn't he, for Mitch Marsh. He's probably not going there to add some support in the middle order.
Absolutely. And what I do like is a hungry Steve Smith out to prove a point. that is pretty tasty. If he does get added to that list, you can probably see a world where they do rejig and he does even open the batting. So let's see how that plays out. There's a bit of a question mark around that. Before we get on to the Australian game, maybe, I mean, you're kind of leading the conversation. Yeah. What's your overarching take on the World Cup so far? Are you liking it, lumping it? There's lots of cricket on. I just want a zoomed out view before we dive into a game-by-game breakdown.
I'm easing into it. I stand by my thoughts on Monday that I feel like it's probably four teams too many. I think 16 teams would have been the nice little sweet spot. I feel like with 20 teams, we've probably got four teams there I'm not that interested in seeing. But, yeah, I mean, there's enough to kind of whet your appetite, but I'll pay closer attention once we, you know, get towards the pointy end. And we haven't had that sort of major shock or upset yet, I wouldn't have thought. Like, there's been...
Almost.
But that's the thing. It feels like every game's had, you know, very close and, you know, the underdog almost got there, but ultimately the established teams prevail. So, you know, if you blue sky it from here, the way that it's sort of going so far, you know, we're on track to get our eight teams through to the Super Eights.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. The only thing that has probably, you know, popped up for me, and maybe it speaks to partly what you're talking to, there was an amazing game of cricket the other night. Maybe the best T20 game of all time. Afghanistan, South Africa. Could well have been. You could make a fair argument for that. There were probably 5,000 people there, maybe. Maybe 5,000 people there in an empty stadium in every game, unless, you know, the home nation has been playing. It just feels like this every 2 year World Cup. You don't get the travelling tourists. It's not that much of an event. It feels a bit made for TV at this point in time. A little inauthentic to what a World Cup should feel like. And you can kind of excuse it when, you know, it's in America and, you know, there's a game in New York or Dallas, but India's the home of cricket.
Yep.
Financially, culturally, you know, population of 1.3 billion and 5,000 people turn up to watch Afghanistan, South Africa. Why can't we, like, that just would have been a far better spectacle with any kind of crowd.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I imagine it's a cost issue.
Yeah. Or a crowd control issue? Maybe that's all part of it. You think, you know, the more people you have there, the more people you need on, essentially, whether it's security or whatever it turns out to be. But, I mean, let's be honest. If you price it appropriately, it's not as if you're going to get a shortage of people to go. Like, there would be a huge appetite for it, but...
Yeah, I need to do some research on ticket prices. It's where my gut reaction is. Anyway, sidebar. I think I'm on your page. I'm looking forward to the pointy end. I mean, I know the ICC likes an event every year now, but every 2 years, you kind of get this lead-in, this soft lead-in, and you think, oh, does it really mean something? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out.
My T20 World Cup history stat of the week, which I'm 1-1 so far. I threw one at you in the first week. You thought, oh, competition's not going long enough, silly stat. Then last week, randomly, you jumped at one. You were really big on the New Zealand run chase. So I've got another one for you here leading into today's game.
First 10-wicket win by Italy in a World Cup T20.
There's that. Australia have never beaten Zimbabwe at a T20 World Cup. They've met once. At Cape Town, when Zimbabwe caused a big boil over in 2007, and Ricky Ponting came out and said, it's high time we get serious about T20 cricket on the back of that defeat. So they've only ever played, in fact, two other T20 internationals against each other ever, one of which Aaron Finch smacked 172, sorry, off 76 balls, which was still remains the world record high. So very small sample size between the two nations, but... we'll see if we add to it today, Teddy.
Isn't that wild that in 19 years they've played each other so few times? Oh, cast your mind back to 2007. And the only reason the world T20 existed, it wasn't even, it was a thought bubble. Remember, Sachin Tendulkar didn't even attend because he was resting. It was like just this side kind of project. And India won it. And it was the birth of the IPL. They thought, hang on, we're on to something. So maybe at some stage we can do a historical and cultural deep dive in that period, because it's a fascinating moment of cricket history. But it also talks to the arc of Zimbabwean cricket. So that was, I mean, they weren't at the peak of their powers, but off the back of Heath Streak and the Flowers, they were just on the decline. To tend to Tiber. Then they had this 15 years in cricketing abyss where you just thought they were never going to play international cricket again. And they've emerged out the other side, and their cricket of late has actually been, pretty sustainable. And, maybe we'll get a little note as to how they're tracking against the Australia Light team tonight.
All right. Now, just trust me that I'll work my way through all the key talking points here. But while we're on the Aussies, of course, they've won their opening game. Travis Head stood in as captain. Nathan Ellis, who, as you know, I'm a big Nathan Ellis fan, 4-for-12 he finished with, including his slower ball out the back of the hand, sort of, which I know Steve Waugh was trying to lay claim that he was the first person to roll that out in limited overs white ball cricket. But it certainly bamboozled a few of the Irishmen, and he was on song. And in the end, the Aussies weren't rarely troubled, were they, making 182 in their first game. Any major takeaways out of that, apart from obviously the drama before the start?
Not really. Paul Sterling looked very unfit opening the batting for Ireland.
I don't mean to laugh, but man, that first ball forced to retire with a
full hand. I think it was his calf. He didn't look in a go. I mean, for a guy that played a lot of professional cricket. We just talked about Zimbabwe's slow ascendancy. You feel like Ireland have been tapering the other way. They're on the on the slide.
Wednesday was the same day. Obviously, the actual start of that match, people probably missed the first five overs of Australia and Ireland, given the fact that epic double super over was taking place.
It was wild.
Scores tied at 187, went to a super over. First super over, by the way, tied at 17, which is a reasonable score in a super over. And then South Africa scored 23 in the second tiebreaker, of which Gurbaz basically nearly got there. I think they fell 5 runs short of what turned out to be the last ball. So hell of a game of cricket, Teddy. Is it good for the sport, the super over concept?
Yeah, it's great for the sport. And I'm unsure that you did the tension much justice there. So I mean, we can unpick it and I'll answer the question directly. I mean, the finale to the match, then the super over, then the second super over. You get three moments of on the edge of your seat. And even within those little moments, in that second super, three ball, Afghanistan gone, then they hit three sixes in three balls, totally changed the dimension. You think, oh, could they? And they just fall short. Of course, the last ball of the South African innings in the first super over went for 6 to tie. So, Afghanistan had no less than 9 opportunities to win this game. No less than nine. They were cruising, and then there was this crazy run out where the bat was over the line, but he didn't put his bat down, that turned the tables. Then in the first super over, they were winning, and there was an edge past the keeper for four. There were just some moments where you thought Afghanistan should not lose this game until they lost it.
It is tremendous drama, isn't it, for the way that it's played out. And I think what the first World Cup we did this, we had the bowl-off, obviously, back then, where essentially you had a bunch of bowlers trying to hit the stumps.
Am I wrong in thinking MS Dhoni took up the ball in a bowl-off?
I think he did against Pakistan.
They had done a study in the UK about how bowlers are really bad at bowl-offs.
Yeah.
And so often you'd get batsmen bowling the bowl-offs because they could bowl more accurately at the stumps.
Bowl a little cross lane medium pacer as a
yeah that's right anyway the point being it was a phenomenal game. It was a great finale. Afghanistan, both teams played well. You know, often in these games of cricket where, you know, I don't think in this format of the game Afghanistan are a minnow by any stretch, or that they are as good as any team in the world, and on their day they turned up to win this game. South Africa played well,
yeah,
and they were pushed right to the limit. And so, you know, we talk about Afghanistan sometimes being a banana peel. They're no longer a banana peel in this format. They are genuine contenders. The next thing that we've got to see is winning those fixtures that, you know, that they put themselves in a position. And of course they do, but they could be a real force. They've got so much talent in that team.
No doubt. And of course the Aussies know that too well on the back of the World Cup in the Caribbean. It was, I think, the best day of the tournament so far. So you had that game. I mean, there's obviously the vested interest from an Australian point of view, where the Aussies were the last of the 20 teams to start their campaign. And then the nightcap on Wednesday was the West Indies beating England by 30 runs. So it now means that England has no margin for error. They need to beat their European neighbours in their last two games. They have Italy, who scored their own banner win last night, which we'll get to, and Scotland. And I don't need to remind you, Teddy, I'm sure, that in T20 World Cup history, England has never beaten a European team. They've suffered losses to the Dutch twice. To Ireland.
Yeah.
And they've also had matches against Ireland, Scotland and the Netherlands that have all been abandoned or no result has been achieved. So that they'll have to do something they've never done and score not only one, but a pair of victories to move through. They can't afford to slip up from here.
Yeah, they definitely can't afford. I mean, the oddity being, as you kind of rightly pointed out in the last podcast, West Indies are seeded two in the pool, England are one. And so even if they get through and they finish second, they're going to get the benefit of that, despite basically they should have lost to Nepal. Italy just beat Nepal by 10 wickets. So Italy might cause some problem. And if England lose to Italy, I mean, you can almost put your money on Brendan McCullum losing his job as coach. That because that knocks them out. That would be a way to go out. But I mean, they looked a shell of a team against the West Indies. West Indies, obviously, the format suits them, but not as much as it has in the past. They're battling away the English. So, I mean, you'd expect them to still qualify, but who knows? Yeah. I'll tell you what I'd love, a monsoonal washout. That would give me some pleasure.
I mean, you can look at it one or two ways. I mean, one is, like you said, it's ridiculous that they keep their pre-seeding. From an England point of view, you can say, yeah, they're high tension point games. They're games they should win against Scotland and Italy. And if they do that, you could make the argument, well, hey, the tournament doesn't really begin until the Super 8 stage, and we're here and we've got our superior seeding and the rest of it's all in front of us from that point on. But as we know with England, it feels like the boulder's rolling down the hill and the storm clouds gather, and all of a sudden it's a lot to overcome.
Yeah, I think you're right. So let's keep a pin in that one. It's a close watch.
Let's do Italy then. So 10 wicket win over Nepal last night. Basically, a school teacher from Sydney and his brother, who's a carpenter in the same city, led Italy to a memorable win. The brothers from Ghost Cricket Club from Campbellton, Camden, of course, they put on 124 wickets unbroken. Justin and Anthony Mosca. First siblings to both score half centuries in the same T20 World Cup match as Italy, through the family business, Teddy did a job on Nepal.
Please, I don't even know what to do with that. What card you've just played? I mean, make no mistake, the Italian team is not flourishing with people who are born and raised in Naples. And so, I mean, both cricketers very well known in the Sydney grade cricket circles, great competitors, very highly skilled. So what a great opportunity to show their wares in this format of the game. So first time win for Italy in a World T20 Cup. So don't know how much to pick apart. Can't say I watched too much of that fixture. I did obviously go through the scorecard. I mean, they're not missing Joe Burns very much by looks of things.
Yeah,
I'm joking. They would have been a stronger team with Joe Burns, but obviously a reference to the blow up between Joe Burns and the Italian cricket team.
This is a story I'm more here for. I don't know if you've caught up with the story of Krishun Kalugamaga, who's a leg spinner. He plays for Roma Cricket Club. He balances international cricket duties with his
pizza
primary
making
job. That's what he does. He's the chef. And he makes pizza in Tuscany.
You're having me on.
He's a pizza maker. He's a chef in Tuscany. And that's essentially what he does with his day job. And then bowls with a part-time leg spin. He's at a global tournament. So
I mean, he would be in high demand. Imagine, you know, being in the same hotel as he is at the T20 World Cup and eating some of the things they're serving. I mean, just made my little pepperoni number. Fire it up.
Some other little talking points out of the World Cup. We'll sort of move our way through these pretty quick. India crush Namibia, largest ever T20 win by India at a World Cup, so 93 runs. Sri Lanka scored the highest score of the tournament so far, 225, and they won by over 100 runs against Oman. Moving back earlier in the week, your sort of smoky team that you like, New Zealand, with Tim Seifert and Finn Allen, two guys fresh off the BBL. New tournament record opening stand, put on 174 unbroken for the first wicket as they won by 10 wickets to run down the target set by the UAE. They did it in the 16th over. Your man Bas de Leder, I know you keep a close eye on what happens with the Dutch. Mm-hmm. They keep their Super 8 hopes alive. Mm-hmm. Pakistan make it 2-0. But the big story with Pakistan during the week was their sensational backflip on the once boycotted game against India, which will now be played as originally scheduled on the 15th of February. So the decision came after countries like Sri Lanka, the UAE and Bangladesh all called on Pakistan to reverse their boycott, citing the commercial stakes tied to an India and Pakistan clash. How do you feel about this, Teddy?
I feel a bit better about it, if I'm being honest. And I'm taking the geopolitical context out of it and just putting my cricket hat on. I know how much that game drives revenue for the ICC and, you know, with it, funding for, you know, nations that can't fund cricket, essentially, and is subsidised by the ICC. So I think 40% of the entire revenue base of the World Cup is derived from that one game. So that makes me just feel a little bit better about the world, I must say.
Do you know what would make me feel better about Pakistan and their... I mean, clearly what's happened here. Pakistan have put their head over the fence and they've gone, oh, what does this world look like where we take it up to India? And then they've basically said, hang on, we might climb back on the other side of the fence. We don't really like that world so much. It doesn't really suit us what's going on over there. Do you know what would be a nice way for Pakistan to make a statement? How about they actually bring it in some of these games? Like, if you look at the head-to-head record in recent times, India have won the last five. They swept them at the Asia Cup. They lead the head-to-head in T20 internationals 13-3. And in ICC tournaments, it is India 17-4.
Yeah.
So it's high time that... How about Pakistan put up a little bit of a show on the field if they want to try and make a statement to, you know, the global superpower that is India? Maybe let's start there on the green stuff and see how we go.
Love the energy behind that. The likelihood of Pakistan coming close to this Indian team is nigh on nothing. I might hate my words there, but I mean, this Indian team's as good as any T20 team that's taking the field for some time, and Pakistan is middling. And so I'm expecting a bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah, but I mean, the appetite for the game grows if... You know,
sure.
If Pakistan,
I agree with the premise. I'll just respond.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It makes them more valuable as a partner in the whole fixture. Whereas, like we said, we got a quick look at the world without, you know, India-Pakistan games, and you kind of think, well, they're not that competitive on the field anymore. Yes, we're going to lose a whole lot of revenue and everything else, but India will be fine. They'll still play England and Australia and everything else. It's sort of, yeah, Pakistan that, you know, need to hold up their end of the bargain. Three games every day for the first 13 days of the tournament. So there's plenty for us to work our way through. The women's series, so Australia and India, starts on Sunday night at the SCG. Basically, there's matches played in all major cities except Melbourne. So the T20s will be in Sydney, Canberra and Adelaide, the ODIs in Brisbane, Hobart, and then the Test match in Perth. India are actually playing a Governor's General 11, which is happening today at North Sydney Oval. This is interesting, I think, primarily around the T20 format of the game, given the fact there's a World Cup there later in the year. It's also where we'll see Sophie Molyneux lead the team for the first time before Elisa Healy comes back to lead the ODIs and the Test series. Excitement levels here, Teddy, of scale of 1 to 10?
7.5. I might pop out on Sunday night to watch that game. Should be an absolute ripper. I mean, by far and away, the two best teams in the world. Fascinating how this series pans out.
India hold the 50-over World Cup currently, and, of course, New Zealand, the current holders of the T20 title. So despite the fact I think Australia still very much consider themselves the number one team in the world, they don't hold either of the major trophies. We expect Georgia Vol will probably partner Beth Mooney at the top of the order, so there's a lot to look out for on the T20 front. And Sophie Molyneux will play her first T20 game since 2024 when she comes back in to captain the team. You can hear it all through the ABC Listener, of course, so check out that on ABC Listen. The domestic scene, Teddy, the one-day domestic, speaking of 50-over white ball cricket, there were two pretty interesting games played on Tuesday. I'm sure you would have kept a close eye on your New South Wales Blues in particular in their pretty sort of sweat-free win over South Australia.
Breeze past the defending champions out at Cricket Central off the back of Curtis Patterson's fine form, another 100, 200s in a week. So all of a sudden, New South Wales, if they beat Tasmania in a day-night fixture next week, we'll play Tasmania again in the final. So, big game. South Australia, good team. New South Wales, you know, on paper, pretty good white ball team.
I've got something to say about this. I feel like with, like, Curtis Patterson now, so back-to-back hundreds, if you obviously include his one in the Shield, but he's now got 200s in the One Day Cup. He's got 200s in the Sheffield Shield for the season. He's the leading run scorer in the 50-over format. He's the third leading run scorer in the Shield. And interestingly, out of all the players, top seven on the run scorers list, he's the only one to average 40. Everybody else averages in the 30s, which obviously speaks a bit to the pitches they're playing on, the balls, and what's happening with modern batting and everything else. But I also cast my eye to a guy like Pete Hanscom, for example. So he was quoted as saying during the week, "I mean, I've still got aspirations to play for Australia. I'm working my ass off to play and doing everything I can to go to the next level." So this is a guy who's in his mid-30s now. 532 runs with a couple of hundreds for the season for Pete Hanscom. And how often does this happen, Teddy, where when we're looking around the landscape for the next guy, and we always sort of blue sky up where we think, is it Sam Constance? Is it Nathan McSweeney sort of recast as a middle order player and sort of all these younger guys? And more often than not, it's always this kind of guy, isn't it? It's, Usman Khawaja coming back in his 30s. It's Adam Voges. It's, it's someone that knows their game inside out in their mid-30s that that's generally who we're looking at. And it takes time for these guys. And it's no surprise that all of a sudden when, the dust settles, you look around at who's standing at the moment and it's Curtis Patterson and Pete Hanscom that should be towards the front of the queue.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's no doubt players of that calibre both played Test cricket. Curtis played his 100th Sheffield Shield game. So deeply experienced. There aren't many players in the history of the game that have done that. And is still relatively young and playing the best cricket of his career, probably, or some of the best cricket. And so when you think about who is the next opener for Australia, someone that's batting at three and doing well, potentially that's something you'd look out for. And, another 100 becomes very interesting, I would have thought, with three games to go. If he can put some pressure on, all of a sudden that changes the dynamic. But talk to the theme more broadly. Absolutely. I think it's not as sexy, it's not as exciting, but this group of selectors and this team have shown time and time again that they're not that interested in the periphery paper talk. They just want the best team. Doesn't matter if you're 40 years old or 22. And so I think these runs will be counting for both of them for sure. And we know Hanscom, with that big tour to India at the end of next summer, five test matches for the first time over there, probably still top three or four players of spin in the country, you'd have to say. And so, I'm sure that will work into calculations as well.
And just on the other game, three cheers for Bo Webster. Got a career-best score there, so 138 in what was a fine game of cricket. WA recorded their highest ever successful run chase in competition history. So they ran down 318 with eight balls to spare. They got it done by committee. Top score was Joel Curtis with his 75. It also ends that five-game winning run for Tasmania. And as you said, New South Wales in the box seat. All they got to do is beat Tassie. It's a bit of a dead rubber for Tassie in the last round. They've already clinched the hosting rights. Queensland and WA are still mathematically possible, but need a few results to go their way in the last round. So that's how that's situated. And I don't know if you saw Nikhil Chaudhry's catch, but that's one worth sort of chucking into your TikTok or your Instagram algorithm.
Into my TikTok, straight into my Chrome browser and see what pops up, man.
It's a nice hang. Don't worry about that. All right, Sheffield Shield round starts on Monday, so we'll talk about that probably this time next week. But Queensland play South Australia at the Gabba, WA play Victoria at the WACA ground, and Tasmania and New South Wales in that day-night fixture, which is a little make-up for the fact they didn't play their pink ball game earlier in the year. Have we got a little bit of time on the back end here, Teddy, for some listener questions?
Oh, yeah. Let's get through a few later on a Friday afternoon, just what I feel like.
You said I've come to Perth, which means I've had time to go through my Instagram messages and all the message requests and try to catch up on a few of these. So first one here from Julian, which reads, ABC Pod is absolute gold. Love hearing you ask Teddy questions that come from the casual viewer because this creates discussions that answer real questions we all have about Australian and world cricket. And then he goes, so you think, oh, this is really positive. He goes on to say, whenever TGC decide to go on a three-week hiatus, this pod is an absolute saviour and an elite listen.
Oh, cheers.
But TGC goes on holidays. I'm like, man, what about every other week? Don't worry about the boys over there. They're fine. Amazing. But I'd like to think we can be companion podcasts, can't we?
Very much companion. Yep. Friends of the show, very different vibes. We like the cheese and biscuits. I don't know who's the cheese and who's the biscuits, but they go together. It's a nice pairing, a little Shiraz with some brie. Who knows?
Georgie reminds me that Adam Voges has signed on for another year, so he'll be there at the Perth Scorchers next year, despite the fact he's giving up the WA cricket duties. Patrick says, love the pod with you and Ed. Watching the second T20 between Australia and Pakistan, so this is from a week or so ago, if both teams are all wearing dark green, this is around the colours and the uniforms, which we love, what is the point? They may as well wear white and play with a red or pink ball. Isn't the short format supposed to be about colour? When there is a colour clash, surely the away team should have to wear an alternate colour like they do in every other sport in the world. It looks so average, especially when the pads don't match.
Person close to your heart. I mean, you would have really got behind that.
It's like, well, it's. I mean, if ever there's a sport where it's easy to tell which team's which, it's like...
Batting and one team's bowling. There's no tackling, there's no handballing, there's no... You can't confuse who's batting and bowling, but sure.
No, but I mean, the idea is meant to be that, yeah, they should be wearing different colours. That's certainly how I'm sure they thought it up. Don't mind it, Patrick, as you said, man after my own heart with the uniform question. And then Josh, who was very fired up watching that same series between Australia and Pakistan, he says, after watching this series, I would love to get your opinion on if this has been the most arrogant Australian tour for a long time. Wow. I understand the team has changed around the experiment prior to the World Cup, but I just feel that the stupid batting has been so arrogant, getting out playing shots as if they were playing my local social T20 team. Pakistan played really well, but I feel their prep has been much stronger. This series shows that Australia has serious squad depth and an inability to play against mystery spin. And this will be used against us. I know peaking now is not the aim, but it's not been good enough prep, especially playing non-squad members.
Were you this sounds like Auburn. We said this is a live show. This is a comment wrapped up as a question.
Well, Josh is not happy.
There's nothing to answer there. He's made his view very clear. What's my view?
Yeah. What's your view on Josh?
I think it's a little heavy-handed. I think before a World Cup, I think given the injuries, given that, you know, there's no warm-up games. They just would have had this penciled in as other warm-up irrelevant T20 games, and so kind of do what you want. Or, T20 cricket doesn't lend itself to arrogance because, you know, the risk reward is out of kilter to what, you know, happens in every other format of the game. So people need to go out with confidence, not arrogance, to dominate a game from ball one. And that's what the game demands. And players more often than not give that, and more often than not, unfortunately, can't produce it.
I like it. Anything to add, Teddy, before we're out of here?
Someone made a comment, not a question, that Raph McMillan must have been listening to the podcast. You know, it's the podcast that the players listen to, because he donned the green floppy in the very next fixture.
He did. He's got that sorted. So, which makes sense, to be honest. I mean, he's playing a limited overs game. He should be wearing a green hat. Maybe he got the brief and no one else did for the other game, that he was in the white hat for the white clothing game, but everyone else wasn't. But hey, shout out to you, Raph. Nice that we're all uniform, because at the end of the day, that's the idea. We're all wearing the one kit. All right. I think that's it. I'm off to go and work out what's going on with the Wi-Fi over here. Unfortunately, Declan, who's got a huge job trying to snippet this all together with the patchy Wi-Fi, late start and everything else. But we got to the end, Teddy, which is the most important thing. We have reached the conclusion of the ABC Cricket Podcast. I will chat to you on Monday.
Can't wait, Corb. Enjoy your weekend.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.